back, and I suppose it's actually a bit too late even at this point to say Happy New Year, but fuck it, who cares? Happy New Year, and Happy New Year, guys. We're all here. Peter's here. Hi, Peter.
How's it going, lads? Been a while.
Carl's there. Hi, Carl.
Yeah, how are we doing, guys? Good to see you.
And Danny Ward, how's things, Danny?
How are we doing? Happy New Year, boys.
All good now, all good. So, luckily, while we were away, not much happened. Apart from about 50 games, City didn't win a game. They played a game that they didn't win. They won all the other games, but they drew one. They still haven't lost. Kane broke Shearer's record. Liverpool finally got rid of Coutinho, but they made pretty good use of the money. We'll chat about that. United were poor, except for Messi Lingard, who's now the best player in the league. Arsenal were even worse. They got knocked out of the cup. Are they probably going to lose Sanchez if that hasn't happened already? Ozil's on the way out, maybe. Is Wenger losing it? Conte, Mourinho, loads to chat about. Maybe let's start with you, Carl, about Kane and breaking that record. And he started the new year pretty well as well.
Yeah, well chuffed for him, and really deserved that record as well. Just a great player, a great finisher, and it was actually quite nice to be there and see him do that. So well chuffed, well deserved, and now we just have to hope that we can produce something maybe in January and get a signing that might help us keep him, because he is a wanted man now.
Yeah, absolutely. And he said that he'll stay at Spurs as long as they're challenging for titles. So about 3-4 months left on that.
Yeah, I mean, that was quite a good statement.
He'll be off this month, though.
Tottenham Twitter exploded when he said that. You've got two camps on Twitter. You've got your Levy haters and Levy out, or your Levy brigade who love him. And like, well, oh, the club's progressing. We've got a stadium and training ground. Like, yeah, so every other fucking team. And they win things, you know. So,
which group are you in, Carl?
What do you reckon? What group do you reckon I'm in?
Yeah, but why Carl?
Kind of fella.
Carl, but like you said, this is the best Tottenham have been since I've been alive. This is the best Tottenham have been. It hasn't been this good since you've been alive. I know you're around a bit longer than me. But this is as good as
61. 61.
Yeah, you were on the bench, were you? But like it hasn't been this good ever, like in modern times. What's your beef with Levy?
The only time it has been is 87, and I must admit that was a year where we came close, and this might sound laughable, but we were actually close to a treble that year. We were in with a shout of a treble. My issue with Levy is I wouldn't want him to go, but I still feel we've missed a lot of opportunities to. I think we could be here at this point now. Potentially, we could have been here 3-4 seasons ago quite easily. And that was under Redknapp when we had our first Champions League year. We had the year where we was pushing the title in January and we brought Nelson and Sahar and we knew how that turned out. And we still see the same things again every summer. This year was quite important, you know, with no White Hart Lane. We just, you know, Champions League back to back. We needed to go out and have a good summer and we didn't. And, you know, we're seeing that potentially in the league this year, you know, lack of squad depth, you know, not buying players who are adding anything, Llorente, you know, people like that. And that's my kind of issue. I don't
it's
think...
Just the owner's fault, though?
That depends. You don't see
Pochettino upset about funds he's being allocated or anything like that ever. Maybe he doesn't push hard enough, or I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that is part of it for me. You've got to have a manager. I think the time has now come where Poch has to potentially either be a bit more vocal if he's not happy with the backing he's getting. I mean, obviously, we know Barkley's got
earned that right
for 15 mil.
He's earned that right to...
Kind of.
Listen, I'm out here because he knows Real Madrid could be circling around him very easily, a bigger club than Tottenham, and he's in 100%. A position of real power now. Yeah, so yeah. I'd say he should start threatening
he's
to throw the toys out of the pram.
Pochettino is loved by the Tottenham fans, and they quite rightly, if he came out and said, "Well, I don't really think I'm being backed the way I need to be to get this side to win a title or trophies regularly." No Spurs supporters would turn against him because I think they'd all turn around and say, yeah, actually, we all agree. And as you say, it only takes Zidane to be gone from Madrid and you can bet they'll have a good look at Pochettino and they'll offer him everything that we can't in terms of funds for players and stuff like that.
For so, Harry Kane.
Exactly. And yeah, he'll be bringing Kane with him, 100%.
You can see it happening.
Carl, I think your frustration is more with the fact you can, because Spurs haven't been great in most of our lifetimes. I'd say your frustration is more with the fact that you can see the possibility to push on now, but they won't do things that seem obvious, like breaking their wage structure and stuff to try and keep the players there. But this mightn't be too popular to say, but I wouldn't be surprised if Spurs would have been seen as a stepping stone by a lot of players until a few years ago, you know. Not a club that you necessarily go on to win things with, but a club that you would go to play well for a couple of years and then move on to a bigger club. I think Pochettino might even see Spurs as a bit of a stepping stone. That won't be a popular thing to say, but, you know, he used Southampton as a stepping stone to get to Spurs, so he might well be doing the same thing there. But I think things have changed as well, because a few years ago, as a Man United fan, we probably would have went and taken Kane off you a season or two ago. But it just shows how much better Spurs are now that they are able to keep him even a bit longer. But I did want to ask you actually a serious question. What kind of treble was it you were going to win in 1987? Chips, curry sauce and fried rice?
Oh, it's a bit of a low blow, to be honest. We could have won it all that year, mate. We were that good. Oddle, Waddle, Clive Allen. But no, you're quite right. My frustration is I think we're possibly a couple of players short of a real potential title push or a couple of trophies. And that's where you're now like, you're so close, but it could all turn so quickly. A missed year this year of no Champions League and not winning anything, and suddenly people like Kane, you know, Dyer was close to joining United this year if he'd been allowed to, Dele Alli. All those players that we've got who are making this a great team, and the manager, may all just sit there and think, do you know what? I'm at a club where they're not prepared to go to that next level and do what they've got to do to get this club to win things. And I'm not going to sit around and wait for that maybe to change once a stadium kicks in, and which that's going to be 3-4 years down the line before any money's coming from that. So that's the problem. We're so close, yet it could all turn tomorrow and suddenly we find ourselves well away from it all. That's the fear.
Well, who would you have in then this window? And would it be, do you think that they're actually going to bring somebody in to rectify some of those problems that you mentioned?
No, I don't. In Spurs, probably not. I would have taken Barkley for the money that he's gone for, because for me, I could put a fucking cone on the pitch to be better than Sissoko. So Barkley, no way could have been a worse option to have playing in than Sissoko. Ideally, I'd love to see Mahrez. I think the games we've seen, that the teams that are frustrating us, is where we don't have that player that can suddenly jink past a couple and stick one in the top corner. I mean, against West Ham the other night, Eriksen had probably 4 or 5 opportunities from the edge of the box. The bloke can't hit a shot to save his life. You know, the weakest shooter I've seen in a long while. They all bobble into the keeper. So I think someone like Mahrez, maybe if you're not him, because people say we won't pay the money, then you got Zaha. But Palace are going to play hardball, because if they lose him, then, you know, the fear of relegation for them is there. But we need a player like that, a bit of a maverick who, you know, some people will think, well, Poch won't want a player like that. But it's like, no, but we need one. We need that magic that he may not be great, but suddenly one moment of magic and he sticks one in the top corner past 2 or 3 players. Do I see us getting anyone? Not really. If I'm being honest, I don't see us bringing in anyone who's going to change anything from the way they're playing right now. Or
I think it's kind of on the money, Carl. With Mahrez, I did an article for the Football Faithful the other day, basically saying I find it really surprising that the rest of the top six aren't trying to get him. I think it's only De Bruyne and Sterling that, from non-strikers, who have more goals and assists than him this year. I know he didn't play great last year, but neither did the rest of the Leicester team. He's proven time and time again against in big games that he can be the difference maker. And I've seen Spurs play a lot, and I think he'd improve any of the top six, maybe except City and Liverpool. He's not going to take Salah's place, I suppose. But, you know, Spurs do get, like, for Ali's a good player. So is Eriksen. I know you don't like him. I think he's a good player. but none of them really good attacking players have. Maybe Son, but they need someone who can be the man sometimes instead of a little pass and move. You know what I mean? And that right hand side is crying out for someone like him. I would have him at Man United in a flash.
The trouble we've got at the moment is, and it was evident, really evident in the West Ham game, was we play this game where we go across the pitch. It goes across the back line, 1, 2, 3, 4 to the full back. Oh, no, they've all had a chance to shuffle across and mark us. Let's go the other side. 1, 2, 3, 4 back to the full back on the other side. And all the teams are doing when they play us is just shuffling across and keep shuffling. And it's too easy to mark us.
It's like a game of football, what's the foosball, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, all lines.
You do see it, two lines of four. It's very hard to break that down. I think Mahrez is the sort of player, though, that can stick the ball through someone's legs, can break one of those lines and get in between the two fours, and that's when things start opening up. These are the players that are dangerous, the players that can break that line, whether it be with a turn, a jink, a 1-2, getting into that space, because he can strike a ball. I think we've all seen it. I'd say after maybe Philip Coutinho, I'd say Mahrez would be right up there with goals from outside the box in the last couple of years.
Well, Danny, speaking of that, because there was a lot of speculation actually linking him with Liverpool. Some of that is kind of cooled now, but I'm sure you'd have him in, and I think he would have been a decent... If you'd have gotten Van Dijk and Mahrez in to replace Coutinho with that money, that's some pretty good business.
It would have been okay. I'd rather a very good goalkeeper. Well, I'm hoping that we still have the Coutinho money left and the Van Dijk one was separate, but I doubt it. But I definitely take him. He mightn't take Salah's place, but Liverpool have always been in a position where they haven't had enough strength at depth. For me, he'd had plenty. I think he could play in two of the three positions across the front line, and maybe he could play in a slightly deeper position and compete with, let's say, Lallana for that kind of position where, you know, you're expected to do a little bit more going forward and maybe not as much going back. Because that's the one thing I don't know if he has in his game. And I know Klopp sees that as a prerequisite to, if you want to play for Liverpool, you've got to have that in your game, no matter where you're playing. I think that's
Danny, do you think that's maybe a reason, like what I said, I find it surprising that none of the top six are going for him. Do you think maybe that's the reason what's holding back managers going for him? Because we all know he has the skill going forward, but do you think maybe it is a lack of defensive work rate, which is stopping a lot of these top six managers going after?
Yeah, well, if you look at it, like, I think if you're a Jose Mourinho player, he wants a lot of hard work. If you're a Pochettino player, he wants a lot of hard work. Jurgen Klopp, a lot of hard work. Guardiola, a lot of hard work. Conte, a lot of hard work. He's probably the perfect fit for Arsenal. If you think about it, because he can probably go to Arsenal, I think that's where he's been most heavily linked. He's a real Arsenal player. He's Ozil. He's maybe not technically as good as Ozil, but I think he'll give you a little bit more than Ozil defensively. That wouldn't be hard, but I think that's the fit for him. Maybe that's unfair on him, because I'm sure if things were going well and he went to a new club, be it a Liverpool or a Tottenham, he's going to want to make a success of it. And he knows he's going to have to put in the yards if he wants to get into the side, because I know these guys, the money is very important to them. These guys are representing, and I'm speaking maybe more of guys from Africa and maybe Eastern Europe and stuff like that. It's a bigger deal because there's fewer of these guys playing in the Premiership. Obviously, there's a lot of English, Brazilian, Spanish, Germans. It's a big deal. Like, look at Mo Salah in Egypt. He's an absolute hero there. Riyad Mahrez is a hero in Algeria. People like this. So I'd say there's a pressure on them as well from their home countries to go and perform, not just from the club they're playing with. So I'd say if he did go to one of these clubs, he'd know he'd have to knuckle down, but I'm sure he's very proud of his roots and he'd want to represent his club and his country to the best of his ability, really.
What about Van Dijk then? Because he had pretty much a dream start scoring the winner against Everton at the Cup End, and he must be pretty happy with that signing.
Yeah, I just did a big sigh of relief. It's nice to just get it done, and it's nice the way it was done. It shows possibly Liverpool learning learning their lesson. Obviously, they couldn't fuck up as much as they did the last time, but it was nice. I just got a message from a mate, and I before I clicked on the link, I just saw, all right, yeah, it's grand. It's another newspaper article. And then I clicked on the picture, and there he was standing in front of a Christmas tree holding a jersey up. And I was thinking, that can't be Photoshopped. Is that Photoshopped? That's not Photoshopped. And then, bang, turn on Sky Sports. There you go. Happy Christmas. Lovely. And listen, he scored the winner. That's all well and good. It was in what was kind of a scrappy enough game. And I think another game that Liverpool had to dig out over Christmas. I think we might get onto it later. But I can see them missing Coutinho for a while. I think it's going to have to, Liverpool are going to change their system. I think that it mightn't be the worst thing. It might mean just going a little bit more solid in midfield and probably losing a little bit going forward. But it's okay winning a game 2-1 or 1-0. You don't have to win them 5-3 every week. But for me, Van Dijk, I think the whole defence was caught out for the Everton goal. But I was watching him closely. And after 2 minutes, he's roaring at the keeper. He's roaring at Matip. He's roaring at Robertson. What I don't understand is, for me, who was quite vocal when he played football, when I played football myself, I never saw what the problem was with people having a roar and just kind of shuffle to your left, shuffle to your right. That's all it looked like he was doing. I don't see why you have to spend an extra 40 fucking million to get someone that is able to speak. But it seems like that's what Liverpool have had to do. But it's good to see there's a lad in there that'll just, he'll basically say, I'm in charge here. And it's on me. If something goes wrong, it's on me. But you do what I tell you. You go where I tell you to go. And Liverpool haven't had someone like that since Carragher retired. And that was a welcome sight for me. Him getting the header, I don't give a fuck if he never scores for Liverpool. It's clean sheets we're after. And if he can marshal the defence and keep things tight back there, then Liverpool have a real chance of getting to a next level. But again, there's seriously lacking a goalkeeper and still need a holding midfielder for me.
Yeah, it's a massive signing really for Klopp, isn't it? Like, I know, okay, so technically it is his biggest signing ever, but it just feels like this could be maybe not make or break, but it's a massive signing because everyone's obviously knows about Liverpool's defensive problems, and this lad's been billed as the man to change all that. Like, and as much as I'd like to pick holes in it, like, I look at him and physically, technically, even mentality wise, he seems to have it all. He seems primed for a move now. What is he, 25 or whatever? He's already had a bit of experience in the Champions League with Celtic already. I don't think he'll struggle too much with the step up, to be honest. He's a top class centre back. It will be interesting though, because, you know, I think it was earlier on in the season when Liverpool had a few problems from defending corners and that. And I think it was Carragher did it himself, the defensive analysis. And he was saying,
him and Redknapp kind of had a little spat, yeah.
Yeah, no, but sometimes, yeah, they were saying,
They were both right, actually.
Yeah, but it's not always the player, you know.
Yeah,
there's a problem with Klopp, how he sets up his defences as well. And I do think he has got a bit wiser. I think the midfield's a bit closer, even before Van Dijk came in. The midfield's a little bit closer to, well, Matip and Lovren it was at one stage.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But
they have been quite solid, Liverpool.
Line, I'm not so sure, but
No, probably not. But Liverpool have been a lot more solid. Although I remember Klopp came out and said it, that he was going a bit more defensive when he was playing Chan, Wijnaldum, Coutinho, Salah, Firmino, and Oxlade-Chamberlain or something like that. And you're going, what? That's more defensive. But it's sometimes, I suppose it's not just personnel that make it's a little tweak here and there. You can have the personnel, you don't have to, sorry, have the personnel that maybe look, we pigeonhole every player and go, he's a defensive midfielder, he's an attacking midfielder. You know, maybe it's unfair to do that. These players are all good enough to be able to kind of, they don't shit themselves when they get into the opposition box, and they don't shit themselves when they're outside their own box. I'm sure they know how to kind of take on board a message from a manager, but it's set pieces really, and just individual errors that have cost Liverpool. They're very rarely under the cosh and kind of get broken down after like sustained periods of pressure. I've said it from the start since we've started doing this podcast: concentration, concentration, concentration. Their goalkeepers have very little to do, and when they're called upon, they don't see it through. Same as David De Gea, he doesn't have very little to do. But when he does have something to do, he's on it like a light. He's always in the game. He's keeping his head in the game. And sometimes Liverpool's defenders seem to find it hard to keep themselves in the game when they're just sitting down and watching, you know, the attacking three or four lads up front run amok, and they just think this is great. It's like they're sitting down on the couch watching it themselves. But they have to remember they're in a game themselves and just keep switched on. But listen, there's a few defenders there for Liverpool that they're just not good enough. They won't be. And it's good that Klopp is. I was surprised he went out and spent that sort of money. I didn't think he was that sort of manager. But maybe he's rolling with the times, and you have to, because if you want to be successful, you have to start competing with City and Chelsea and Man United, you know.
Let's chat about United then, Peter, because they've had a very, very poor Christmas period. Maybe results starting to go their way a little bit now. I mean, obviously the title race is over now, but the second to fifth is very, very tight. It's pretty much anyone's.
Yeah, now, poor Christmas. I always think if you get out of Christmas with kind of 10 points after the four games in quick succession, it's good. And yeah, I suppose we haven't talked in a long time, but, you know, it started. That Leicester game was frustrating. Now, that was comical, how the Chris Smalling being injured and how they didn't throw that away. And that just smacked of a team of very immature. I think Mourinho said it himself after, and there's, you know, people try and jump in everything he says these days, but he was 100% right there. That was just immature. Like Pogba, it shocks me with Pogba sometimes, because he has it all, like physically, technically, all the rest of it, but he doesn't seem to be a very intelligent footballer. And it shocks me because he played at Juve with such an experienced team: Pirlo, Chiellini, Benucci, all these boys, Buffon. And
check out Peter with all his perfect pronunciations. Oh, yeah, Jesus Christ. Four on the bounce. He just nailed every one of them. Like, you started panicking. I was waiting for him to fuck up. I couldn't believe it.
He's been practicing those for weeks.
Yeah. Good man.
I have it written in front of me here. I even have it written in the way you know how to pronounce it.
We can see what you got for Christmas, Pete.
He was the captain that night, and I couldn't believe that he wasn't able to cop it himself, or even the other players able to sort it out. But then the Burnley game, obviously disappointing. 2-0 down, coming back 2-2. The Southampton game, that was really poor. I watched that. They looked tired in that one, to be fair. And I think City went out the next day at Palace and looked equally tired. I know Scholes was giving a few of them stick, but I thought they just looked tired that day. And then obviously back to winning ways now. But like, I think, it's just, I find it very frustrating at the moment, because I think with, you know, listen to United fans, but we're still second, right? I'm not saying it was a poor Christmas, whatever. You know my thoughts and looking back through rose-tinted glasses and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, it's 5 years since Fergie left, and United have qualified for the Champions League once since. Like, I think a lot of my generation of Man United fans need to wake up a little bit. And, like, this is the new reality now. We have no divine right to be winning everything. We do get judged because of that success under Ferguson by a different standard than most clubs. United don't win a game or they draw one and everyone loses their shit. That's just the way it is. We have a highly controversial manager at the moment. He courts it himself. I know that. I'm not sticking up for him in any way, shape or form. I've massive respect for Mourinho's record. I was reading the other day, though, that like when he wins his next trophy, he'll become the fourth most successful manager of all time, behind Ferguson, Jock Stein, and some Russian fella that I won't even try and pronounce, lads. So, my point is basically, dislike him all you want and say you don't like him going defensive in certain games, but you're an absolute fool to think he isn't still a top, top manager. There's been massive mistakes at Man United for the last 5 years. Fergie, I only really appreciated him, I'd say, in the last 5 or 6 seasons, because I still can't believe he was beating some of them Man City and Chelsea squads with the squad he had, John O'Shea's and Anderson's and Tom Cleverley's and all that. It's just a testament to his brilliance as a manager. I don't think any other manager would even got that squad, the squad he left, into the top four. You know, David Gill leaving at the same time is a big mistake. Hiring David Moyes, big mistake. Van Gaal didn't work out very well. I know everyone says, obviously, I think why people expect us to still be successful is because we have spent an awful lot of money. But Van Gaal spent half of that as well. And it just, you know, this whole thing, the biggest club in the world, just because the marketing department is trying to convince everyone of that, we're not even the biggest club in Europe. There's six or seven clubs in Europe who won way more European trophies than United ever have. So don't let that fucking shit of selling more jerseys in Hong Kong trick you into thinking we're the biggest club in the world. So it's frustrating at the moment.
Signings then? I mean, what are they going to do? What can they do to rectify it? Or is it just a case of riding this season out and starting again in the summer?
Yeah, well, they're going to, obviously, I know everyone says, oh, but you spent 300 million. And Mourinho said it's not enough. Now, I understand that people say it should be enough. But the fact of the matter is Man City are 15 points clear. So it's not fucking enough. They haven't bought well for the last 5 or 6 years, and that's just the way it is. Like we're going to have to, they're going to have to go again in the summer. City have brought things to a new level, and United are way behind them. But they're second in the league. If you listen to most people, you'd swear they were, you know, down in sixth or seventh or something. Okay, going out of the cup was poor, now don't get me wrong. And some of the performances have been really insipid lately, but the players look low on confidence. A lot of the players don't look... Playing for Man United brings a lot of pressure, obviously, and a lot of them don't seem to be able to handle that as well. It's still quite a young team. Yeah, listen, it's far from perfect, but I would, you know, I think you're going to have to be realistic now. I think United will have a decent run in the Champions League because I think Mourinho is good in that competition, as his track record proves. A decent run in the Champions League and the FA Cup and finishing second and third, that's just the way it's got to be. We have no divine right to be winning things all the time, and, you know, things go in cycles. I grew up, me and Danny are close enough in age, I grew up, you know, winning right the way through. Danny, I know Liverpool had their Champions League glory and all, but I think most fans would say, and I can say from personal experience, the biggest satisfaction is winning that Premier League. And things go in cycles in sport, and that, and United are going through a poor phase or second, I keep saying it, but they're not anywhere near what they were for a long time. And most people love shitting on them, and I get that 100%. But I think a lot of Man United fans just kind of need to maybe just accept that, you know, things are never going to be the way they were, and we might have to struggle for a couple of years before we get back to where we feel we should be. You know what I mean?
Where do you think?
I think they're lacking. Like I said, I think they need some. I'd take Moura or Mahrez there on the right wing position, because I think I like Mata, but they need a bit more thrust out there. They need a bit more pace. Ander Herrera, they need another midfielder, I think. And I would switch Pogba out to playing in that left hand of a three in midfield, the way he did at Juve. He played there against Everton, looked brilliant. Because there, he isn't very good tactically. If he loses his man out there, there's a lot more to happen before his ricket actually causes a problem. Like, do you remember the Liverpool game last year when he couldn't mark Lovren from a corner? That was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. He's not a very intelligent footballer. So I'd move him out there where he can affect the game more in an attacking sense, but then also not affect it in a negative sense defensively. And the likes of Phil Jones and Smalling and that, you know, in the summer I'd be looking to get some really decent long-term full-backs in, because them lads have had their chances for I don't know how long. But for me at the moment, if I could sign three players in January, I get another strong, athletic midfielder in there. I would get a right-winger in, and I would get another striker, because Zlatan, I think we all thought, oh, wow, amazing, how did he come back from that injury? But he's never going to be the same. Doesn't look fit. They need more goals there, and they need someone with a bit different than Lukaku.
It sounds like they need a lot, Peter.
They do. They need an awful lot, Danny, an awful lot.
I think they need some smarts up there. Up front, if you look at their front three, for me, if I was picking United's front three, best front three, of Lukaku in the middle, and maybe I might go from Rashford and Martial, and then I'd have a Mkhitaryan, a Mata, a Pogba, one of those. Depends who you're playing. I think maybe Matic can be enough, and then you can have a Pogba and a Mata or Herrera, or you can kind of have two progressive forward-thinking players. the front three there, they're not smart enough. I think, you know, I know you're what you're getting at with Pogba. I just don't think the movement is smart enough. The pace at which they play the game is smart enough. Their runs are smart enough. And I don't like them. I don't like to compare, because Liverpool play this. Everyone plays the same sort of system these days. All the big sides, you know, the kind of 4-3-3 or 4-2-1-3 or whatever way you want to tart it up. That's kind of the way it is. But the movement of, let's say, a Mo Salah in comparison to, like, he plays in the same position as a Rashford or a Martial.
Well, they play on the other side, Danny. We have Mata out there, who's a tidy little footballer, but he's not built for.
I know. Okay, but yeah, all right. Well, you could play Salah. You could play Salah the other side. Let's say that's not really what I'm getting at. I'm just saying that they both play in those kind of inverted wingers, stroke strikers roles. Look at his runs. Look at where he ends up. Look at the amount of chances he gets from the runs he makes. I think if you're only going to have one main focal point striker, your other two wingers, they have to be getting on minimum 12 to 15 goals a season. They just have to be.
Well, it's a little bit different though, isn't it? Because United are... Lukaku is a different striker to Firmino, because he's a kind of an axis around which the other players... Like, he plays them, they play around him. Whereas they're all pointing towards Lukaku.
Yeah, know, well, he's the trigger for a press as well. It's different.
But don't play that system. If you don't have a striker who's fluid enough to be able to play that system, then don't play it. Then your wingers, if your focal point is your winger, then why not have natural, old-fashioned Ryan Giggs and David Beckham wingers, but lads who will put a good ball into the box. You never see Martial and Rashford out on the touchline whipping balls in, very rarely. Lingard maybe more so. And he actually comes in. I think Lingard, I think maybe he's impressed a few people. He's really surprised me. He seems to be able to. He seems to have a bit of his head doesn't seem to be up his own hole. He seems to be able to see the way the game is going. I've seen him put good balls in from wide, but I've also seen him popping up in the centre of the pitch and causing some real damage. And I know, Sam, you probably wanted to talk about him. I think he's been absolutely fantastic for the last couple of months. United's best player by a country mile, and I never thought those words.
Yeah, he's playing in that central role now. See, the thing is, I think anybody who I discuss football with, maybe I'm being a bit harsh on him, but I think Rashford gets away with fucking murder because he's young, English, and he's from Manchester. And there's a huge amount of my ex-Man United players in the media at the moment. But a lot of the last few games I've watched, it's actually been hit. Like, there's times where all he has to do is slip a ball through, and he won't. He refuses to cross the ball, like, point-blank refuses. Even if he has a man beaten down the outside, he'll still try and turn back and just lose the ball. Martial just lacks that bit of killer instinct because he has it all.
He's a much better
finisher. I don't think Rashford's a good finisher either. But like, Mkhitaryan's been a massive disappointment. I think most just Premier League watchers expected him to have a serious impact this season, especially after the first few games.
His confidence must be, he must be the one of the most brittle confidence. He started off the season like a train, 5 assists in about 2.5 games or something like that, which is more than he had last year. And then did he get a small injury out for a week or two? Gone, head gone, fucking right, loan him out to Inter. You're going, this lad is now starting to look like a 50, 60 million pound player. The little intricate balls he was playing through to Lukaku. And then just gone, like, just out of nowhere. No confidence, and now he even looks like he won't even have a fucking shave. He just looks. He put on a few. You know these sort of lads. You haven't seen them in a while, and you go, "Gee, are you fucking sleeping on the couch, mate?"
Hang on. Let's move on a little bit, because we're 40 minutes in and we've got loads more to cover. We can chat a bit about Arsenal as well, maybe, because they were terrible over the Christmas, got knocked out of the cup. As we said, Sanchez. It looks like he's going to go to City. Ozil might stay on till the end of the window. He's been linked to United, actually, possibly as a replacement for Mkhitaryan. Who wants to take this up? What's going on at Arsenal?
Same shit, different year.
Next point, move on.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, done, fine.
It's true, though. You can't really say much more, can you?
No, it's fair. Arsenal TV has been blast as well, Arsenal, by the way.
Sorry, can I say one thing, I wanted to get it in about Man United. I know we've gone on about it for a while, but I was reading today actually that that's why I think United might have slipped behind a few other clubs is in certain areas, is because they're talking about Wenger leaving at the end of the year, right, and Ancelotti coming in. And supposedly Arsenal have, they've been planning for Wenger's obviously leaving for a while, but they want to avoid, you know, the big drop like United have had since Ferguson had. So they've got that Borussia Dortmund fella Sven Mintzelad in, the guy who signed Dembele and a lot of them. You know, Dortmund are kind of seen as one of the best talent factories in Europe.
And they've got Mark Overmars in as well, don't they, as director of
football? No, Mark Overmars. They got a lad from Barcelona in the end, Sam, I think.
Oh, did he not go?
Yeah, as head of football. I saw today that they got a lad from Barcelona in as head of football relations or something. So what they're doing is they're kind of turning it into, so they're taking all the power away from Wenger behind the scenes and just letting him concentrate on coaching now. Like, you know, we had this discussion about the European model and its benefits a few months back.
Yeah.
So when Wenger does leave now, it'll only be the coach of the team leaving. It won't be the fella who was in, was like basically the head of the scouting, even if there was another fella there, and the fella who was, you know, basically a director of football role as well as being the manager. And I think United kind of slipped behind the times a bit there, because obviously Ferguson was so good and he was still winning things. But a lot of the other clubs seem to be putting these kind of structures in place. And that's why I think even off the pitch, maybe United have slipped a little bit behind the other clubs. And I never thought I'd say this, but it looks like Arsenal are gearing up for Wenger's eventual departure in the right way, you know?
Well, that is Arsenal covered pretty much. We haven't really talked much about City because they're just fucking boring. I don't know what anyone wants to talk about. I mean, they're really, really, really good. They're unbelievably good, but I don't know what else there is to say about it. They've won the league. That's it. It's done. They're probably through in the League Cup. Has anyone?
Well, did anybody else see the game last night? They were pushed better by Bristol City than I think I have seen them by any Premier League team.
You wait till Sunday, boys. That's what they'll be beating on Sunday. And I'm putting my head in the fucking block right here.
I'm telling you, Danny, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to put a few bob on Liverpool. I actually think
I think, Peter, you've said it now for a while. I've been waiting for this. I was actually kind of offered tickets there yesterday. I can't bloody afford to go over, which is depressing. I was offered a ticket yesterday for the Cup. I don't know. If Coutinho was still there and firing, you know, I'd have a little bit more confidence. But I just think now Man City, listen, it matters not to Man City. They can afford to lose this game and keep going, you know. But I just, for a confidence from a Liverpool point of view, to go out and beat this City, to halt their run, to stop them going the season invincible, I think it's going to be an absolutely cracking game. I think there are two best teams in the country to watch anyway. Not saying they're the two best teams, but to watch, I think they are. And going toe-to-toe, Super Sunday, I can't wait for it.
Yeah, it's going to, like, I don't think at the moment City are blowing teams away. Maybe for the last month they haven't been. Like, I saw something today, they've won like eight
Silver.
Games 2-1.
Yeah, Christmas maybe is a tough time to start blowing
away. They're winning a lot of games 2-1. Oh, like last night again, a last minute winner. How many times has that happened over the last month, you know? But I thought it was really like refreshing to see, because one of my things about, like, I tend to stick up for the teams that play defensive sometimes, saying, well, like, what are they supposed to do? If they go out after City or Liverpool, they just get smashed. But, like, Bristol City pressed them right up the pitch last night. Like, and in the last 10 minutes of the game, Bristol were right up there, like, you know, pushing to get a winner. So it was, like, an unbelievable. But I thought Bristol were absolutely brilliant. Obviously, they came under, you know, they went under a lot of pressure for certain periods of the game. But every team, you're going to get that against
He's a good manager, good progressive manager. He looks like he knows what he's doing, Johnson. Yeah, I can see big things for him. Bristol City, I've seen them play a few times this season. They play a lovely brand of football. They really do.
Great for over 2.5 goals, Ben.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. I put them in the first couple of weeks in the prediction podcast, and I think it was the first 2 weeks that they didn't score over 2.5.
Standard.
For me, anyway, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And that's why that's been given a bit of a kick to the curb for now. It'll be back, though.
Well, we've had a mention of the Carabao Cup, and actually that brings me on to the quiz. Shall we have a quiz?
Yeah, why not?
Right, well, this one, it's all about the League Cup. So it started in around about 1960, and from 60-61 season to 80-81 season, it was just called the Football League Cup. Since then, it's had sponsors and loads of different names. So I want you to get the names in order. What you do is you say your name, and then you give me the name of the competition as you think it was, and you get a point for each one you get right up until the current name, okay?
So from what year are we starting?
You're starting from 81-82 to 85-86 is the next one when it had a name after the League Cup, if that makes sense.
Carl.
Peter.
Carl was first.
I don't know.
Carl was first. It was the Milk Cup point.
You fucking
Peter.
Way,
Peter.
Motherfuckers.
The Rumbelows Cup.
No.
What year are we at, sorry, from 86?
86, 87 to 89, 90.
Peter. Johnson's Payne Trophy.
No, it's totally different competition. The World Cup.
I know, yeah.
It fucked off for a while, didn't it?
Can I skip that one and go on to the next few years?
No, we've got to get this one out of the way.
Well, I think Rumbelows is next, is it?
I thought Rumbelows was next, yeah. I did, because I thought we got rid of
it. What was it called when you nearly won it in 1987, Carl?
Oh, fuck knows. Mickey Mouse Trophy back then.
Right, we'll
no,
skip.
I think that was the Rumbelows.
We'll skip it. 86, 87 to 89, 90 was the Littlewoods Challenge Cup.
Yeah, Littlewoods, yeah. Yeah, okay, Danny for the next one. I was going to say word, and it's not. Go on.
Carl. Carl. It has to be then the Rumbelows.
It was the Rumbelows then, yeah.
For fuck's sake. He gave me that.
And then Carl for the next one.
Carl?
It was the Worthington Cup.
It wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Coca-Cola Cup. Danny, Coca-Cola Cup.
Danny, it was the Coca-Cola Cup. Well done. Next.
Carl. Worthington Cup.
It was the Worthington Cup. Carl's running away with this one. What was it next after that?
Peter. Scary's Paint and Hardware.
No.
What year are we at?
We're 2003-04 to 11-12. Big one. It's called this for ages.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Fuck.
Carl.
Carl.
Carling Lee Cup.
It was the Carling Cup, yeah, that's right.
He's got his phone out this month. Like, for a man that supports a team that's never been in a final.
Well, they won this one, didn't they?
It was Spurs' best.
We was in that final. We lost on penalties to United, didn't we?
Yeah. And you won as well.
Beat Chelsea.
We beat Chelsea, yeah.
2-1, yeah.
And next?
Carabao Cup.
Nope.
What a shit game, Sam. Good luck to you.
After that, it was the Capital One Cup.
Yeah. Ah, gosh.
And then it was the AFL Cup and now it's the Carabao Cup. So there you go. Well, I think Carl convincingly won that one. There's no doubt.
Carl.
Well, speaking of...
Spurs are a cup team.
Yeah. Or a League Cup team, anyway. Speaking of the League Cup, well, they're out of it this year, but Chelsea and Arsenal are in it. They're playing as we're recording. Do we care about this?
We still have another hour till it kicks off. Why don't we make a couple of predictions and see who comes out correct?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay.
These never go badly.
Yeah, I know. No, I'm going to go... You have to pick your score now, right?
Yeah, fine.
I'm going to go with... Conte actually has only won 1 out of 6 against Wenger, I think it is. Better than the FA Cup final. That was some game the last day, actually. That was brilliant. The 2-2. I'm going to go 2-2 again, actually.
2-2 again. All right, Peter. That's Peter's Carl.
Where's this game being played at? Is it
at Stamford Bridge?
Stamford Bridge.
Is it?
Ooh, I'm gonna go 2-0 Chelsea. 2-0 Chelsea.
No, yeah, Chelsea Arsenal. Okay, I'm gonna go first leg tight. First legs are usually a bit tighter. 1-0 Chelsea. I'm gonna go tight.
All right, okay, not too bad. Right, let's chat about...
What about you, Sam?
Me? I'm going to go... I'll say 2-1 Chelsea. 2-1 okay. Chelsea, all right. So sometimes I think the League Cup kind of throws up some more entertaining games than the FA Cup.
Yeah, well, you look at every year, you always look at people, you know, you start looking at the quarterfinals and the semifinals. You see the same fucking top 5 and 6 in the Premiership in there. They take for teams that supposedly don't take it that seriously, you always see 3 or 4 of the top 5 or 6 in the semi-final. You have done for the last number of years. And maybe that just goes to prove that the money involved, that the West Broms and the Stokes of the world, they don't take it as seriously as they should. But for a team that, let's say, outside the top six, if they were to go out and really go for it, there's a trophy to be won there for one of these. And even Liverpool now, I'm upset. Liverpool have won one trophy in the last 11 years, and that was the League Cup against Cardiff. Liverpool should be all over going out and trying to win a trophy. Big clubs are all about winning trophies. Coming second and third in the league is lovely, but you have to start winning trophies. Success breeds success, and even if it's just a baby step to getting you to an FA Cup final, getting you to a Champions League final, a UEFA Cup final, a big pressure game in the league, you need to be in these situations. And, you know, I'd never write off, and as players want to play at Wembley and they want to win trophies, and I'd say they're upset when they're left out of the third and fourth round against these so-called lesser sides, just to give, you know, kids a chance. Go out and try and win the competition, because it's a route to Europe, and it's a day out for the fans, and it's definitely worth winning, for sure.
There's a few things in there, lads, really, like the way it's changed over the years, because I think, you know, it used to be that the big teams would leave a lot of players out, and then with the money in the Premier League and now a lot of even the Championship clubs would go, well, I'd rather stay in the Championship or get promoted to the Premier League than risk this, you know, risk getting players injured or if they're tired or whatever. But I think sometimes with the Premier League clubs as well, because, you know, it's important to have big squads now. I think it is a chance, not necessarily like just to play the kids the way people used to say, but to actually keep some of them squad players happy by giving them a few games, you know what I mean? But I think if you get that, maybe it's because it's earlier in the year as well. That's why teams rotate a lot as well, because they're not so sure where they are in the league. But if you get longer in the season in the FA Cup, which we're all told by the BBC non-stop every fucking time it's on, this is the greatest cup competition in the world. You know, it's easier to have a run at that when you know you're in a safe position in the league. But, like, I think Mourinho's done it all the time since he's been in England, is he targets that competition to win it, because it's a big confidence booster for your team, for your squad. And I actually thought Spurs, I don't think that would have been a, you know, Spurs have this thing, oh, you never win it, you haven't won a trophy with this group of players and all. I thought maybe they should have went after that trophy a little bit more, because last night was the first time City played a full strength, well, even close to a full strength team, you know. I think United probably the only team that really did play a full strength team through the competition. So, like, if you're a club who can't win a trophy, I think it's a good thing to target.
The worry about that is, isn't it, is that where it's so early, like at the key point where that cup was on the run and we lost to West Ham, we were right in the midst of our Champions League group. And obviously The key focus is just, let's get through this Champions League group. Everything else is non-important right now. So for us, it probably came at a bad time. Whereas if it started now, you'd probably go like with the FA Cup. We'll probably try more for the FA Cup than the League Cup now. Because, all right, we know we're just floating around that top four, top six space. But back then, we weren't through in the Champions League group. And it was like, well, that was key to everything.
Yeah, so, sometimes it has thrown up some madcap games over the years, isn't it, though? Sometimes, because you might have a striker there or some player who's struggling for games, wants to make a name for himself, a couple of good kids. Like, I remember, I think, Arsenal and Liverpool playing out some mental games, 6-3s or stuff in that competition a few years ago. And it can throw up some really entertaining games, to be fair. Probably more entertaining than the FA Cup, even though we're told all the time that the FA Cup is the biggest cup competition in the world.
Well, you never see players, they don't just sort of trudge off and just accept, okay, that's it, the game's over, we've won it. You know, when teams win it, they really celebrate. They look like they're really delighted to have won it. And I'm sure, Carl, you know, I mean, it's the only trophy that Spurs have won in quite a while. I'm sure it was a great day out for the fans.
Yeah, I mean, you can't deny it, can you? If you win it, then, as you say, I think it would be a massive pressure off. I mean, this year would have been ideal for Poch if you look at it that way, because you could have said, well, early February, you get a trophy on board, and now all of a sudden your season is already then defined as a success, potentially. And now the rest of the year is just potentially a bonus if you carry on doing well. Sometimes that cup's a kiss of death, isn't it, for teams, because you win it and then suddenly everyone's on the beach all of a sudden. I remember the year we did win it. I don't think we won a game virtually for the rest of the season after that, because everyone was kind of like, well, job done, we've won a trophy, happy days, we're in Europe. And then they kind of felt like they'd hit the beach. But yeah, let's put it this way, if we won it, then we would have been one of the best days of our current lives as such.
Absolutely. Not too much longer in the show, but there's something I thought we'd talk about, which is, maybe you've seen this clip during the rounds from BT Sport. It was Chris Sutton and Frank Lampard were on chatting about young players and how clubs are taking in players when they're like as young as 4 and 5 and giving them all these expectations, and then when they don't make it, their lives and everything is ruined. Chris Sutton, I think, said in the piece that it was stealing children's childhoods, which might seem like a lot, but it's probably true as well. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this, and maybe Carl and Danny, because you've got kids, would you encourage your kids to be professional footballers, or what would you do?
I've kind of seen some of this. Well, I used to do some training for Tottenham's community team, and we used to go around the summer, the school holidays, and do some coaching and that for kids. And we was always kind of told, oh, look, you see anyone who you think's great, you get them, and we snap them up straight away. But like as you say, it's really hard now, isn't it? Because if my boy got to 7 or 8 or something like that, and suddenly I have a Spurs scout knock at my door, it's the incentives that some of these clubs are probably offering, isn't it? They'll come through the door and like, oh, we, you know, if your boy signs for us, we'll give you this, and we, you know, we'll promise you that, and we'll do this. And most parents probably think, oh, I can't turn, you know, could I turn this down, this opportunity for him? Where, yeah, maybe it's hard. Maybe at that point you should say, well, no, I'd rather he still just, you know, enjoys himself for another few years, and then if he's still good enough for, you know, 10, 11, 12, then you'll still want him. But I suppose it's that thing that what parent potentially takes the risk that they won't take that offer, given this, I suppose, the life that kid could have with the money involved in football and the life they could have now. I suppose that's the thing that makes a lot of parents go, yeah, we'll sign for you, because they're looking at the sort of lives these guys lead and financial security for the rest of their lives, and maybe the thought for is this the right move for my kid goes out the window a little bit.
From what I only saw a bit of the clip, Sam, it looked interesting, though, like an interesting documentary. But I think a lot of it comes from how the parents handle it, you know what I mean? I don't think necessarily the kids going and playing with the academy is the problem. It's the way that a lot of the parents carry on that becomes the problem, the pressure they start putting on the kids already sometimes. Like, I played football at a decent level in Ireland when I was younger, and there was always a couple of young lads. Like, I was never putting you know, your parents would, like, look after you, bring you to games, and, you know, make sure you had the gear and all that kind of stuff, but there was never any pressure, you know what I mean, that you had to go out and do something. Yeah, everyone get competitive when you're at the game, but to see some of these parents going ballistic at games, and like, there was a couple of lads I remember playing with when I was younger that their fathers, like, had them out training, and, like, you know, well, not with the team, but out training non-stop by themselves. And I think it takes the enjoyment out of it then for kids, you know what I mean? And that's the problem for me. It's how the parents handle it sometimes that has the bad effect on the kids. And then when they don't, I suppose when you're a kid and you're training with one of them clubs, I'm sure they all think they're going to make it, but I think, what did they say? It's 99.7% don't make it.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's almost impossible to make it.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's kind of, when that rug gets pulled from under your feet at 15 or 16, when you grew up your whole life thinking, probably not concentrating in school or anything because you thought you were going to be a professional footballer, that's kind of the problem then, what to do with it then. But, you know, once you kind of tell them they have to balance it with other things and all the rest, I think a lot of the problem comes from how into it the parents actually get and the pressure they put on the kids.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of maybe parents trying to live their dreams through their kids, you know what I mean? And putting the pressure on the kid on their kids to get there, I don't know, and to fulfill a kind of a fantasy that, you know, geez, look at my boy playing for Liverpool or playing for Man United. This is brilliant. It would be an amazing, amazing thing as a parent. Like, I've got my young lad, he's not even 2, and he's got a little Liverpool kit and all that, and I just put it on, and you're just going, that's deadly, look at the head in him. You know what I mean? This is brilliant. Like, imagine him running around Anfield. But I think there's most of this, you can't blame football clubs in a way. What they're trying to do is trying to spot talent. I think it's ridiculous how early they're trying to spot it. Sometimes, like, there's kids that can't even wipe their own arse, and you know what I mean. And they're already getting kind of contracts, you know, 4 and 5, and even younger. I've heard, like, these lads are barely on their feet, you know, like, they can, oh, this, look at this lad, he can run. All right, he must be a good footballer. And remember, lads, when we were young playing football, there might be a big lump of a lad who could actually kick the ball 20 yards. He was the best player. By a country mile, because he kicked the ball. But when you went on and you got a little bit older, you were going, where's Big Chunk gone? He's not playing football anymore, you know, because he can't run because he's, you know, Mars bars in his knees or something like that. So I think it's important for parents to get kids out. I think the most important thing is to get them out involved in a club and in a range of sports to let them find out which one they like the most. You kind of hope it's football, but you can't really. I've always a joke. People, my young lad looks like he's going to be a big lad, and people keep saying, "Oh yeah, play." He'd be at number 8 for Skerries or for Leinster and all that. And in my head, I'm going, oh, "Fucking hope not."
No, keep away from that shit.
But listen, you just hope they're good at something. You know what I mean? But I think it's it does rely. I think Peter was right in what he's saying. The parents. And I haven't been there yet. My young lad's only not even 2. But if he's a very good player and I kind of start thinking, geez, we might have a chance, I can't say for definite that I'll be just going there and just going, best of luck, boy, and shutting my mouth for the 90 minutes. Because if I hear there's a scout from somewhere there probably will be words had in his ear going, listen, you better not fuck up today, mate. You know what I mean?
I think the thing is, there's a lot of parents would probably think, if I deprive my kid this opportunity, am I depriving him of a dream opportunity here? So some parents probably sign up straight away because they think, well, I don't want to deprive him. He could potentially play for this wonderful, you know, this wonderful club. But I think, as Danny said, I think it's really key. You should get your kid out playing all sports. Now, my boy likes football, but he's really just got into tennis lately. And again, it's like, well, to me, if he wanted to excel in any one of them sports, brilliant. But you've got to keep your head on them, haven't you? I think I was listening to a podcast the other day where they were saying you've got these like 20-year-olds now playing sport, earning 25 grand a week. But none of them have been prepared for the fact that that could end tomorrow. And as a parent, the best thing you could do is prepare your kid to say, if this works and this dream comes off you, footballer, brilliant, but your education is key. And you got to make sure if this ends tomorrow or you're suddenly let go or you get this injury that screws you over, you've got an education that you can fall back on and suddenly now go out and get another job and have a good life, rather than probably a lot of parents just think, footballer, brilliant, job done. Don't worry about school, son. Go out and do some keep the uppies rather than your own work. And then all of a sudden that dream dies and it's like, oh, you can't add up 2 and 2. What's 2 and 2? Don't know. Oh,
yeah. Right.
Can do 50 kick-ups, but can't.
It's a tough one, though, isn't it?
Well, if I was 13 or 14, it's a hard one. Like, if I was 13 or 14 and I was signed up to a club and people are saying, go in and do your homework, I'd be like, fuck off, I play for Man United. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? So I'd say it is a hard one. I think maybe they should bring in some kind of age thing, though, where they can go into the professional clubs, even for the kids not to think they've already made it. And, you know, like we say, oh, you have to balance it with education and all the rest, but, like, even kids who don't think they're going to play sport, not everyone excels at education anyway, so... It is a hard one, but I don't like when the parents go over the top sometimes and you see them almost pressurizing their kids into having to make it. That's the part I don't really like, but it's an awkward one. It is crazy that they're signing them so young now, though, 3 and 4. That's just fucking insane.
So you mean me telling my boy that my mortgage is based on him is a bad thing, Peter?
Yeah.
No pressure, man, mate.
Shit.
Yeah, because it is a tough one, because you end up kind of thinking that the sort of American collegiate system for like the NFL and stuff like that kind of works, because then they have to get grades to get in the team, they have to reach a certain age before they can become a pro and stuff like that. But then, because players come from all over the world with football, you know, other clubs and stuff won't have the same system, so it's hard to know what to do, really.
Yeah, well, if you look at the American footballers and all that, though, Sam, like 2 or 3 years after they retired, they're all broke. So, and these are guys that should be, like, as you said, they've gone through college, you know, they should have better educations probably than your average footballer will have. They still don't know how to deal with fame, money, and then at the end of it, and the lack thereof, you know what I mean? So I don't think there's any real right way of going about it. I think it's your home life, your parents, I think, have to be the most important people when it comes to that. And I would like to see, I think, more parents representing their kids. You know, you just keep hearing
the agents.
Agents, yeah, like they're poison. Like,
the other thing.
Like, there's for every Jerry fucking Maguire, there's 4,000 kids or abjuns, you know what I mean, or Sky. And listen, Jerry Maguire's
that's
a prick.
That's Danny's favourite film, by the way.
You know? Ah, listen, we've all seen it, you know what I mean? Don't pretend you haven't, Peter, you know what I mean?
We had a man.
It is
Peter, you had me at Dick's Fuck Assholes.
When you think about it, like, because there's, you know, what are football clubs supposed to do? Like I said, I don't think they should be going in so early, right? But then, you know, like, so for each Man United, say Man United, just because I'm a fan, they'd have an under-12s, an under-13s, 14s, 15s, right the way up. And each squad will have, like, 20, 25 people in it. But then when you get to the first team squad, like, it's impossible for everyone to get through. If you get one or two out of each age group, if you get one out of each age group, you're actually doing well. So it's just one of them things. Like, the clubs are always going to fill all them spots and all them youth teams. It's maybe you have to be more honest with the kids from a younger age, saying, look, there's a very good chance this isn't going to happen to you. You know what I mean? But I can't see it. I can't see it really stopping anytime soon, to be honest with you.
The club's view is we don't give a monkey's what this looks like. If we get the next Lionel Messi at 5, then that's great for us because the wealth and, you know, what that brings to us as a club. So the clubs don't care, do they? The club's view is, well, if they sign up, then, you know, the parents know what they're signing up for, almost.
I think it's nearly more important for the smaller clubs, for the smaller clubs to unearth a gem. You know, the bigger clubs can go out and buy one. And I know these, you know, you always kind of think, look at these clubs, these big clubs putting 50 million into an academy, are going, geez, that's a lot of money. If they find one player, you know, every 5 years, it's worth its weight in gold. It's actually paid. That's the sort of numbers we're dealing with here. They find one player that plays 50 or 100 games for the first team. That 10 million a year for the academy, it's worth it. You know, because they've saved themselves 40 or 50 million. And because transfer fees are just going up and up and up, I don't know if it means that it's going to be harder to break through or if more money's going to go into these academies.
Well, his point there is a good one, isn't it? Because it's like with Kane with Spurs.
Yeah.
Now, if Spurs sell Kane for 200 million, then that makes by finding that kid at such a young age and putting him through the system well worth it, isn't it? That sort of profit.
Just don't have any kids.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, listen, if you're worried about it, don't bother having any.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Top advice for everyone all around, and we unfortunately haven't been able to solve that problem here today on the podcast, but who knows, watch the space. Just time then for prick of the week. Who's our big prick of the week, Peter?
Oh jeez, you caught me off guard here. It's such a, I don't know, don't have one.
Mourinho, Conte maybe, Carl?
For me, my prick of the week is Robbie Savage after his weekend phoning on 606 trying to defend Mark Hughes not getting the sack at Stoke. I mean, I know obviously Hughes is Robbie Savage's big hero and was his boyhood idol and everything, but let's face it, after the way Stoke have been playing, not just this season but half of last season and that, The man was due to be given the sack. Never a more useless manager in my view. But Robbie Savage was trying his utmost to argue with everyone to say, no, they're all wrong. Hughes is a brilliant manager. He's like, I don't know what Hughes Robbie Savage has been following. But that's a bit of a prick of the week there, Robbie.
Yeah,
I know Robbie Savage is a prick, but Mark Hughes, I don't know, 3 consecutive finishes of 9th in the table, Stoke's best ever finishes ever in top flight football. Mark Hughes. Mark Hughes did an all right job. He would have definitely kept them up. I think we all agree that they would have stayed up. It's probably, I'll admit, that Stoke have probably gone a bit stale and they're just looking, they need something new. But Mark Hughes will get another job in the Premier League, and I have no doubt about it. And someone like West Brom, after getting Pardew, or he's a good manager. He was on the cusp of becoming a top four, top five manager. I know he was there with City, but he did a great job at Wales, did a very good job at Blackburn. People have very short memories, lads, and I think he was a very good manager. And at one stage, it was a while ago now, when Liverpool were dealing with the likes of Roy Hodgson and that, I would have taken him over him in a heartbeat.
You're right though. He had the two ninth places, which were their best ever finishes, and he has done a good job at other clubs. He's terrible at QPR, but apart from that, Blackburn and Fulham, he did really
QPR was a fucking mess.
I saw some stats the other day. This wasn't last season; they were really poor, and it's run into this season. I think out of his last 60 games, he's won 8 or something like that. So you can't just keep having poor results and expect to keep your job.
But they don't just get beat either, do they? They get tonked. They don't just get beat. They get absolutely smashed.
And I'm surprised by that, but I don't think you become a bad manager overnight. I think it's gone a bit stale from there at Stoke. But listen, we spoke about this before. What do you expect when you go into Stoke? What's the point in even having a manager? Honestly, what's the point? Think about it. What's the fucking point? You go in there, you get ninth. People get fed up. Fucking ninth. I'm sick of getting ninth. You were playing fucking League Two football about 12 years ago or whatever.
I want a relegation scrap.
Yeah, I want a relegation. Like, what do you want? Like, just make your peace with it. See, I've had to make my peace with Liverpool not winning it for a long time. And I think Peter's starting to make peace with United being shite now.
I've given up.
We know where we're at the moment. Stoke fans must be depressed beyond tablets because they just wake up and go, yeah, we might beat one of the top six this year, but we're going to finish ninth. That's just the way it is. You have to kind of reflect and look back and go, geez, things were a lot worse. You know, but maybe they weren't. Maybe they enjoyed it when they were, I don't know, winning League One and stuff like that. Who knows?
Well, wasn't Mark Hughes. It was Robbie Savage who's the prick of the week. Danny, have you got somebody else in mind?
I'm waiting. I think it's the 25th of February. Man United or Chelsea, Man United. I'm not sure who's at home. I cannot wait. I just can't wait for. Just and I'm usually not into the bullshit of handshakes and all that. I'm looking forward. I want these two lads to get in the scrap. Mourinho and Conte. I thought Mourinho wasn't even. No one was trying to get at what he said. He was just. It was such a. He's such a little prick. Honestly,
he's lost that magic.
Mourinho is finished. He's finished with people. I don't think he'll be at Man United for maybe next year. That's it. He's poison, and he's starting to piss off a lot of people. And there's still a lot of people, I'd say, that look at him. I know I was reading something that Liam Brady was talking about. He pissed off a few people in Italy and a few big names in Italy. And Antonio Conte was a very, very good footballer in his day. And I think a lot of them still... ex-footballers still look at him and think of him as the interpreter, and that's the way I look at him. He doesn't understand. He's not a real man. I don't think he didn't have to go there where he went with the Conte, who I have to say has been proven not guilty for
He wasn't not guilty. He was given a ban, which he still served a ban.
Mourinho, wasn't it? Bored. When he first came, Mourinho, he had that clough about him. He was cocky.
Everybody loved him back then. It's getting to him. It's got to him too much. He needs it too much to make himself feel important. Maybe he didn't get enough hugs off Mammy. I'm not sure what it is.
He can't handle being second. That's his point. He can't handle it. City, and he's lashing out. And you have to remember, lads, that like him looking at Conte, it's like some lad that's with his ex-board. Conte came in. He's been taking digs at Conte since he got there because Conte, you know, he's at Chelsea. So Mourinho will always have a thing about Chelsea because they kicked him out the door twice. So he's picking a fight with him all the time.
That's poor, though. Managers don't go to that level. You don't bring up poor. Like, what's next? You know what I mean? I was with your missus in the disco. You know what I mean? Like, it's poor. I think it's poor stuff. And it actually, Conte pretty much, he basically said ballast pit 5 o'clock. You know what I mean?
No, it's not. Oh, yeah, actually, Danny, do you know I did it?
It's a place that's scary when you get claimed ballast pit 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock. He basically claimed
it. Sorry, hang on. Yeah, exactly. For our probably, is Carl has claimed a thing in England. Is that what you say?
I'll claim you
if you want
claim
to
claim you. No, we don't really. That often, no.
No, you say I want a proper sort out.
Well, there is only one way to solve this issue between them two, isn't it? And it's got to be a half-time centre circle fight for sure.
Yeah. Lads, I did it. Listen, hold on a second, lads. Hold on. I did it when it kicked off the other day. I did a poll on Twitter. I got about 500 votes, and it was just questions saying who'd win in a bare knuckle boxing match. Hashtag Mourinho, hashtag Conte. And Conte got 79% of the vote. And even though I do defend Mourinho at times, I have to say Conte kicked the fuck.
Oh, he'd fucking batter him,
But Mourinho's a little biznitch. There's no doubt about it.
Mourinho does
Mourinho
something sneaky, though.
He'd go out in
your eyes and that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, he'd do like what Gladiator. He'd stick a sneaky knife in your back just as you're going.
I would. You know, that'd be our manager, wouldn't it? A dirty little RG, he'd be in there with things like that. Potcher's got no problem.
Oh, Potcher'd be dead. Actually, so top six then. Who's going to win?
All right.
Top six Royal Rumble.
Oh, yeah. Arsene Wenger's Ric Flair. So he's just been... the grey band on him. Who'd win in that? Jesus.
I give it, lad. Conte for me. Conte,
yeah. Listen, Jurgen Klopp's big...
Klopp was a big man, yeah. Klopp was a big guy.
Conte probably bite your nose off.
You can embarrass him. You can just pull that fucking toupee clean off his head. Jump off the top rope himself. I can't be Pep.
I don't know if anybody knows. Have you ever seen when Mourinho talks about him sometimes and he ruffles his hand through his hair?
He
does it on purpose. Like, it's basically saying, at least I have my own hair.
Well, he did say actually during the week, he said, I wouldn't be pulling my hair out over something like that.
Yeah, no, that's all aimed at him.
All right.
That's fair play.
Conte for me, lads.
Conte for you. I think Klopp would have a good old ruckus. I think he'd...
Well, the Germans don't win many wars, but they might win the Royal Rumble, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, well, we'll never know, but we can only hope that we'll get a face-off between Mourinho and Conte. Oh, God, I really hope, Danny, you're right. I really hope something kicks off on the sideline.
You'd pay money brilliant. To see
it. Anyway, that's it. That's it from us. Thanks so much for listening. Just time to say thanks, Peter.
Cheers, lads. That was good to be back. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Carl.
Cheers, guys. See you next week.
Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, lads. Enjoyed that.
And remember, if you want to get in touch with the show, send us an email to podcast@thefootballfaithful.com. See you next time.